Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From the Abraham Lincoln Radio Studio at the George Washington Broadcast Center. Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty. The Armstrong and Getty Show.
In the next few hours, literally the few hours, we're going to begin sending in equipment to Ukraine for air defense munitions, for artillery, for rocket systems, and armored vehicles. You know, this package is literally an investment. Not only in Ukraine's security, but in Europe's security, in our own security. We're sending Ukraine equipment from our own stockpiles. Then we'll replenish those stockpiles with new products made by American companies here in America. Patriot missiles made in Arizona, Javelins made in Alabama, artillery shells made in Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Texas. In other words, we're helping Ukraine while at the same time investing in our own industrial base.
So he's making the argument. He signed the bill into law. The Senate passed it yesterday, 79-18, the $95 billion aid package for Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and then they also passed the TikTok thing. But 79-18, it wasn't even close. But he's making the argument to mostly those Republicans who say we're giving money away and lowering our stockpile. He's trying to make that argument. He goes on to say that this is in our direct national interest and that if Russia takes Ukraine next, they'll be going after a NATO country and then we are drawn in. He goes on to say this.
You know, it seems to me we should take a little bit of a step back and realize what a critical moment this was for the United States and for NATO. This is a historical moment. In the last 2 years, we've helped unify, strengthen, and expand NATO. Imagine if instead we had failed to step up now and support Ukraine. All those gains would have begun to unravel. The cohesion of NATO would have been weakened, and our national security would have been undermined without any question.
Yeah, I think all that did happen.
Am I supposed to pretend he's not a slurring old man for the purposes of this discussion so we can stick to the main thread of it, or... can I mention, even like that Charlottesville speech he made that we played the audio of, he sounds like a different human being.
Right, from 4 years ago, 3 years ago. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Putin started this war, but changed his strategy and failed. We stand with our friends and bow to no one, he went on to say. All right. Still no talk of what a win looks like or... anything like that? Maybe now is not a good time because so unlikely to get a win. So Ian Bremmer's take on this was, America continuing to send Ukraine $60 billion in support year after year is unrealistic, no matter who wins the presidency. What you really want to do at this point is position Ukraine as well as possible for eventual negotiations. I suppose you wouldn't say that out loud.
No. We sent, I can't remember the figure, $130 billion or something like that to get them ready for their great counteroffensive, which practically went nowhere. It kept the battle lines more or less where they were, which is, you know, it's better than the alternative. But, so the idea that this $60 billion is somehow going to be decisive and turn the tide, no, it's just not realistic. But, the Biden administration not going to talk about winning because I don't think it's possible at this point, especially with this level of support.
Yeah, and what will be lost to history, because nobody will remember how this unfolded, is if we had given them the stuff that we eventually gave them anyway, right at the beginning when Russia was on the run, very likely could have actually pushed them completely out of the country, given them a hell of a spanking, and they would never think about doing it again. I look forward to getting further in this David Sanger book I'm reading about how these decisions were made behind the scenes of, no way we're sending bullets. That would be too provocative. We'll end up in a nuclear war. Okay, we'll send the bullets. But no way we're sending, you know, the next size shell. But no way, it'll start a nuclear war. Okay, we'll send it. No way we're sending tanks. It would start a... Okay, we'll send it. Planes, training the pilots, all the things that we eventually did that didn't start a nuclear war.
Yeah, Joe Biden's a spineless coward.
He is
the issue. I'm not saying there's nothing we would have done that could have provoked an escalation, but at least he agrees. And the idea that there's either a win driving Russia completely out of Ukraine or it's a loss... It's a false choice. It's a win for NATO to make Putin's quote-unquote victory so incredibly painful and expensive that he never wants to attempt anything like that again. I mean, that's a huge win, historically speaking. Now, the Ukrainians wouldn't be satisfied with that. But as a realist, I don't see the Biden administration giving them nearly the backing it would take to win, especially because Russia's entrenched now. It's not like you can do tomorrow what you didn't do today in warfare, as Mike Lyons, I'm sure, would agree.
Right, and I have no idea where Trump is on this, if he ends up winning. No idea.
They're surrounding us, but let's not do anything crazy. Let's think about it for a few days, and then we can do something about it. Yeah, it doesn't work like that. But anyway, again, saying that either they drive the Russians completely out of Ukraine or it's not a win is just the wrong way to look at it. There aren't wins and losses in history like people seem to think there are. There are occasionally, like World War II, it was an enormous conflict, but that was one of many, many, many conflicts the United States has been in through the years. Some are clear wins, some are clear losses. Most of them are kind of in between somewhere.
The clear wins happen when you go all in.
Correct.
Right. That's why I'm reading that book, Sherman's March to the Sea, about the Civil War. Just, we went all in. We're going to just devastate you until the military and the population says uncle.
When we say unconditional surrender, you're going to say yes, please.
Right. What do we do to Germany and Japan? That's the only time you really get the clear wins. And usually you either can't do it or you don't have the stomach for it in the modern world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure complete victory was ever on the table against Russia. It's too big. It's too well manned, too well equipped, in spite of their, you know, crappy military and their corruption. The rest of it, they're just too big.
Another interesting part of this David Sanger book I'm reading is you forget how much courting of Putin everybody did. There's so much talk about Trump and the coddling authoritarians or whatever. George Bush met with Putin 22 times. Met personally with him 22 times in his presidency.
Yeah.
To try to get him, you know, be friends with him and move our direction and toward Europe. And there was even talk of eventually having Russia in NATO. That was on the table with Condoleezza Rice and the Bush administration. That's how far we were wrong about what Putin's actual intentions were. And then we probably do remember Barack Obama then sending Hillary over there with the big giant red reset button because we're going to be friends with you and we can work together. I mean, everybody completely misread what an evil bastard Putin is.
Please tell Vladimir I'll have more flexibility after the election. That famous and W famously, clownishly saying, "I looked into his eyes and I saw a good man. I think I could see his soul," or whatever he saw. Good Lord.
Yeah. Putin was it's not like he became the evil, ruthless, murdering, child abducting, horrible human being he is. He was always that guy, but he completely fooled a bunch of our presidents.
Yeah. America's naivete is one of our defining characteristics. Man, we're easy to dupe.
That, and we assume everybody wants to live like us.
Mm-hmm.
Which they should. I mean, it's a better way. But they don't. Or at least their governments don't.
Well, son of a gun. What are you going to do?
It'd be something. It's got to be something for George W. Bush to see what Putin's doing now. I mean, just the absolute just worst things you can imagine, he does. He bombs schools with little kids in them. I mean, that's the kind of guy he is. Well, he helped Assad kill all those people. Bush, who met with him, sat down and you know, laughed and drank vodka with him 22 times. That'd be weird.
If Vladimir Putin were listening to the show right now, number one, Vladimir, thanks for listening to the Armstrong and Getty show. Secondly, I'm sure, in fact, let's do this. Here's a little Joe Getty's radio theater. Right. Michael, do you have the theme music? Of course. Next caller, Vladimir in Omaha. Go ahead, Vladimir. I think it's funny you just explaining Sherman's strategy for total victory, then condemn me for bombing school. Same thing.
Right.
Although Sherman didn't, you know, burn schools with kids in them. Yeah, he has the stomach for total victory, for decimating a people, wiping it off the face of the earth, if necessary, to take their land and their resources.
There you go. Anyway, Joe Biden signed the stuff, and he says we're going to be sending equipment within hours to Ukraine. And the cheers went up in the Ukraine parliament with U.S. flags everywhere and chants of USA, USA. So.
And worth mentioning again that the vote in the Senate was 79-18. 79-18. Overwhelming. Damn near unanimous.
Yep, but the majority of Republicans in the House voted against it, which is interesting. Anyway, more on the way. Stay here.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, "We are going to give women meaningful beauty." And I said, "That's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life."
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Man, is the book industry in trouble. Yipes. And as a big fan of books, I hate to hear that. But more on that later.
Yeah, I got the major FTC ruling against non-compete clauses. That's an interesting discussion there. A lot of what's going wrong with America on the show today. And we thought we'd take a moment for not only a bit of humor, but something great about America. For instance, that we make up complicated sports, then make the rest of the world play them. This is German comedian actor Flula Borg. Enjoy.
Baseball, we have some pillows. We have some pillows on the dirt. And then we have some grass. And then we have people that stand all around to make a grabbing of the downstairs. Grab of crouch, look around, look around. Then man with stick is there. And then he, boom. He throw a ball to the stick man. And the stick man may hit. If he make a miss of three times, then out. But if he hit a ball very far, then he may run on all the pillows around the pillows. And the boys in the trench, they sit in the trench and they look around and they spit, 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 spit in the head. and then clap, clap, and spit, spit. And then they run to the field. But time out, after 7 times of run on field, everyone sing a song about popcorn. And then they do more hits and throws.
What? I would listen to that if it went on for another 5 minutes.
And then after 7 times, they stop and sing a song about popcorn. That's funny.
That is funny.
So, which came first, baseball or cricket in India?
Oh.
Is a baseball come out of cricket or vice versa?
I think that's the story, yeah. Yeah, I think, and there was a game called Rounders that was based on similar, I don't know.
Anyway, and I mean, I could Google it if I cared enough, and I don't, but right. So there's a fair number of Indians in the town I live in, Indians from India, as opposed to the people running the casino over there. And they play cricket in this one particular field not far from my house. And when we go on bike rides, we go by the cricket match on Saturdays regularly. And there's a big crowd that comes and watches and everything like that. And I've stood there and watched the cricket match. And again, another thing I could Google if I cared enough to find out what the rules are. But I just try to pick it up by watching. And it's just completely confusing to me. I just have
no idea.
Well,
they call the pitcher the bowler, which is ridiculous because he's not bowling. And there are some wickets which don't appear to be sticky. I think you're supposed to hit those or avoid them or something. And the guy with the bat is actually a spatula, not a bat. So you got spatula guy. I ought to do an American version of what that German just did. Spatula man appears to be angry that the bowler is trying to knock his favorite sticks down.
Boy, so little happens. And I realize if you're not a fan of baseball, that's what it seems like when you watch it. But watching cricket, it's just like nothing is happening. And I'm sure if somebody understood, they would say, oh, the strategy that's happening here is tense and amazing. But it just looks like nothing. A lot of people standing around.
Cricket makes baseball look like hockey. Cricket's amazing. Well, don't they play for like 3 hours, then they break for lunch or
tea? They play for like 3 days.
Right, and then they come back and play for more hours, and it goes on and on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I'm sure it's fine. Hey, let me save you right in the email. Guys, it's worth checking out. Once you get to know what cricket's all about, you're going to love it as much. Sure. Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Our friend Craig sent this because he's written books, and he just came across this about the publish industry and talking about how depressing this is. Did you know that 96% of books sell less than 1,000 copies in the modern publishing world? So what are you even doing? And this goes back to, there was an attempt to a couple of big companies to get together a couple of years ago, and it became a giant court case. Penguin Random House wanted to buy Simon & Schuster, but there was a concern that it would become a monopoly. And then in the court case, a lot of the numbers about the publishing industry came out. So these numbers are kind of old. It's probably worse now than it was then. But it's amazing how few books are actually sold and how narrow the whole thing is. In 2020, only 268 titles sold more than 100,000 copies. So you hear about a million seller book or whatever. Only 260 books that year sold more than 100,000 copies. And 96% of books sold less than 1,000. There's about 50 authors that really sell any books at all in the entire United States. 50. Total. 50. So you're, what's his name, Patterson with his crime novels, or he puts his name on the front and somebody else writes them at this point. And, you know, various people like that. And then a handful of diet books. There's just like, there's hardly any.
Yeah, there's like 6 mystery people, 6 spy novel people, and then J.K. Rowling.
Yeah. I texted back to Craig yesterday, I said, well, if the average person under 30 spends 7 hours on TikTok, which is what the average is, doesn't leave you a lot of time to read a book.
Yeah, I've long been thinking about writing a book, and I think I'm probably going to, but I've finally gotten past the fact that nobody wants it and there's no point. It's like the same reason I wrote songs and made albums. Nobody's dying for them. The process is fun. It's good for my brain, and I enjoy it. So I'm going to do it for that reason. But with all content available all the time everywhere, Seems silly to introduce more into the marketplace.
Good stuff is still good stuff of everything. And
it won't be good. No.
It was a dark and stormy night.
Have I sent you the galleys already?
Is it that whale you've been trying to get for all these years?
Oh, and the captain, he really wants to kill that whale.
Armstrong and Getty.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
The FTC has finalized a rule that will eliminate the vast majority of non-compete clauses in people's contracts. A non-compete clause is a provision that basically prevents people from taking a job with a competitor or starting a competing business, usually within a particular geographic area and for a certain period of time.
That's a pretty good description. I'm not sure why it needs synthesizer strings and muted nylon string guitar behind it.
So they eliminated non-compete clauses? Who's this affecting?
I am so conflicted on this. There are lots of stuff going on here. First of all, the head of the FTC, this woman, Khan, is that her name? I can never
remember.
Lina Khan.
Trade Commission?
Trade Commission. Mm-hmm, exactly, yeah. Lina Khan is a lefty. She is a lefty among lefties. She believes the government ought to run everything, and she's running a super activist FTC. I'm not a fan. The libertarian in me looks at non-compete agreements, non-compete clauses, whatever, and says, all right, on the one hand, and this is the idea that, for instance, to cite a fairly defensible example, all right, I am going to bring you on here at Apple, and you are going to become completely acquainted with our engineering, our manufacturing practices, the rest of it. I'm going to pay you a bunch of money. In return, you agree you're not going to quit and go work for Samsung next week. That's a fairly square deal, especially if I'm well compensated. I understand that. And so the libertarian in me thinks, well, if you don't want to make that agreement part of your employment, go work somewhere else. Mm-hmm. You're free to go work wherever you want. Okay. The other side of me sees the way it's often abused. Like in Florida, for instance, it's extremely widespread. If you go work for a hair salon as a hair cutter for a very modest amount of money, very modest, you have to sign an agreement saying, I will not for the rest of my life leave this salon and cut the hair of any of its clients.
Well, how did the free market not fix that to where the hair salon that doesn't make you sign that wouldn't get all the good hair cutters?
That's the interesting part. Maybe it's not overtly collusion, but it's collusive in a way that I need to seek out some counsel from my libertarian brethren and folks who know more about the law. If virtually every hair salon in Florida does that, because everybody does that, and it's so common that you just can't find a place to work that doesn't make you sign something like that, then you really don't have an effective alternative. I mean, you're already fairly poor. You're never going to make a lot of money cutting hair. And you're not going to, like, go from Pensacola to Miami to seek freedom of clippers. You don't have the resources. And the idea that a simple hourly worker, and the problem with it is it's run rampant now into places where it's indefensible. You know, tax preparers, just every company that has any sort of client or regular customer, you have to say you will never do business with any of those customers. sometimes for unreasonable lengths of time. And so the idea of after I leave, you have not rewarded me for signing this clause. I kind of had to because everybody's doing it. For the rest of my days, I'm constrained by my relationship from you, from engaging in commerce willingly with people who want to engage with me. That bothers me a lot.
Haven't we had no complete non-compete clauses?
Yeah. Yeah. They're illegal in a handful of states, California.
We couldn't quit our radio job and then go work for another company.
Yeah.
For a while, yeah. Usually as a period of time, not forever, yeah. Like the haircutting thing. I didn't know that was a thing.
Famously, the company we worked for at the time, because we said, no, we think we can for these reasons. And they said, well, you're probably right, but we'll spend you into bankruptcy. We have attorneys on retainer. It doesn't matter to us. And we thought, well, that's a powerful argument. And one we will consider. So we bided our time and did it later. But it's interesting. There are definitely competing energies here that are all about liberty and people freely associating doing business and that sort of thing. And I'm just not quite sure where I arrive. I can see there are some situations where it's absolutely legitimate, particularly if there is compensation that's clearly in return for making that agreement. But the tough part is when you got, low wage people constrained from making a living because, when they were a 19-year-old shampoo girl, they signed a contract with, what would be a good hair salon name? Curl Up and Die, in suburban Pensacola, Florida.
God, somebody I used to have, there was a long-running joke about how dumb the names are of all places where they cut hair. It's like, yes. It's part of getting your license. You had to come up with a dumb name.
The clip joint. Yeah.
We're a cut above because we're on the second floor. You see.
Let's see. I guess that's enough of that.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, thank you.
D-Y-E, I'm sure you see.
I get it.
Back to the book. You mentioned you thought about writing a book. So I was bringing you those book statistics about how few books make it. 90% of books sell fewer than 2,000 copies. 50% of books published. Now, these numbers are from 2020 from a court case. So I don't know how accurate they are now. Half of books published. Now, I'm assuming they're not talking about just
self-published.
Yeah. I just wrote a book and listed it on Amazon. I assume they're not talking about those. I don't know that, though. 50% of books published sell less than a dozen copies. Half of books published sell
discouraging.
That is highly discouraging. Because
Calling up your siblings,
right,
like your children, and saying, have you gotten the chance to buy a copy yet? I'll give you the money back.
I feel like I can count on mom and dad. We'll buy one and share it. Okay, we're not buying two.
And we haven't gotten around to it, dear, but we will.
Right. It's like getting people to buy your kids Girl Scout cookies. Similar deal. Half of all books published sell less than a dozen copies. That is a discouraging profession. You're going to write fiction or nonfiction? You got a novel in you? Still working on your novel?
I am working on a fiction thing. What I'm thinking of that I'm definitely going to finish is nonfiction.
No, okay.
It's an unauthorized biography of you, frankly. It's a tell-all. It's unvarnished.
Joe Getty breaks his silence.
When have I ever been silent in your experience?
In this essay, No One Will Read Your Book, talks about how the big publishing houses invest small sums in lots of books in hopes that one of them will break out and become a unicorn, which actually makes enough money to fund all the rest of the books. The unicorn happens every 5 to 10 years or so. That's how seldom a book actually breaks out and becomes a hit and sells a bunch of copies. So what I was wondering about this is, how is there so many Michael Cohen, maybe Hillary Clinton's a bad idea because she was actually Secretary of State, but these giant advances they give to any celebrity of any level that writes a book that nobody's going to read, and then they go on all the shows and talk about their book as if somebody's going to buy it. How does that work?
I think some of that's publicity crap, because some of the numbers, it's like NFL contracts. You know, Peyton Manning signed an $800 million contract. Well, a lot of that's incentives. And if he retires or doesn't make the team or whatever, they trade him and he doesn't get the money. In those, a lot of those are advances against sales. Now, sometimes it's just a signing bonus, and that's legit. But if it's an advance against sales, that essentially means, all right, we're going to give you $1 million up front. Your first $1 million of sales, you don't get anything because we already paid you for them. It's advanced royalties. That's the rock and roll bands have that all the time, or did back in the day. I think that's part of it. And there might even be you got to return it if you don't sell this many clauses, but nobody says that because that would ruin the splash of the publicity.
What isn't in these stats is, are people reading significantly less?
Oh, I got to believe that's the case.
I do, because my attention, I have to work at reading books because my attention span is not what it used to be.
Yeah, and there's so much to look at and do and take in.
God, I'm trying to get my 14-year-old to be a reader. And both his mom and dad are always reading books, so I thought that would wear off. But, of course, he's grown up with a faster-paced world than I did by far. I mean, it's not even close. And he just finds the idea of reading a book just painful. And even though he's practically locked in his room for a half hour every night before lights out, just I would think out of something to do you'd want to read. But just, I just bought him a copy of Slaughterhouse-Five by Kurt Vonnegut, just trying to come up with something that I thought would hook him and be really interesting. And like, you couldn't not want to read it, but I'll see how it goes.
POW trudging around in the ruins of Dresden? Teenagers love that sort of thing.
What do you recommend? Do you recommend something?
Well, you've done like the Hardy Boys and stuff like that, right?
Oh, yeah, he's way past that.
Yeah, intellectually. Has he done the Harry Potter books?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. Yeah.
Animal Farm.
Henry, he had to read Animal Farm for school. Hated it, but read it.
So much of that stuff is not for kids, as you've brought up many times.
Right.
They make you read stuff you can't conceivably relate to or appreciate.
No, you just don't have the life experience or anything like that. Why do they do that?
Oh, well, I think in the case of Animal Farm, it's because we were in a global conflict with communists.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And
but
you wanted to teach the kids the principles of anti-communism.
I could come up with a bunch of examples, but why they teach you stuff in schools, this came up yesterday with Henry. So we're driving around and he was talking about he'd been looking in the back of his history book in school and he's really disappointed. He doesn't think they're going to get to some of the stuff that he really wanted to get to in his history book. And I told him how, and I would like to know this. My whole life, I wanted to learn about World War II. And we would get our history book at the beginning of the year, and I would turn toward the back, and there'd be World War II, and I'd think, oh, I can't wait. And we never, not one time in my entire school career, kindergarten through graduating high school, did I learn a word about World War II. Now, people complain about schools today, but that's a pretty big knock on schools back then. What is it with public education and not getting to the biggest event in human history?
Just learn about the Stamp Act over and over again every year.
But seriously, so they're still doing that. Why? Why don't we do a better job of figuring out what do we want kids to learn and what is not that important? Why don't we do a better job of that?
Goodness, I don't know. You'd have to ask teachers' unions, I guess.
Well, I can't even come up with a lefty teachers' union reason. Is it just laziness, or they just don't give a crap enough to look into it, or what?
I don't know. No clue.
I'm highly troubled by what you learn and don't learn as a kid. Those years are so valuable. It's such a rare time in your life where you're going to go be in a building for 6-8 hours to learn, and we waste it on a bunch of crap a lot of times. That's not the important stuff.
A capacity to absorb it like you'll never have again in your life, too.
Right.
Now, there's a fair amount of enthusiasm for teaching history in recent decades because it's Howard Zinn's History of Why You Should Hate the United States.
Right. That gets in there.
And you see the bloom of that flower at Columbia University, NYU, Berkeley, etc.
He's doing a little study right now on Abraham from the Bible, which I was happily surprised by. I didn't know that would be okay or allowed.
Right, sir.
But it was on the list of characters to choose from to do a biography of.
Let's see. As a kid, I loved Strange But True hockey stories. I read that over and over again. Strange But True baseball stories. How about 50 Shades of Grey? Has he read that yet?
I read a lot of Mad Magazine. Probably cumulative. I spent more time in Mad Magazine than anything else in my life.
I graduated into National Lampoon. Did a lot of reading of that. Wonderful, yeah. Back in the day.
And what good has it done me? Now I make a living trying to make jokes. Has that done me any good? Well, I guess maybe it did. We will finish strong next, Steve.
Armstrong and Getty.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, "We are going to give women meaningful beauty." And I said, "That's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life."
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Was that cheering or booing? So that's a 9-year-old, probably younger than normal, for competing in the 2024 gull screeching contest. How much can you sound like a seagull? This is a 9-year-old. That's pretty good right there.
Jack, they weren't booing. They were saying coop. His name's Cooper.
Okay. Let's hear it again. His vocal cords haven't changed yet. We had to have an age limit on this.
Damn gull screeching purists. That's a kid who sounds just like a seagull right there.
It really
by
is.
By golly, there's no arguing that point. I congratulate the young man. I hope this is his springboard to greater success in the future, sounding like other shorebirds. You know, when I was a young dad, if there had been some sort of national animal noise contest, I feel like I could have at least fought my way to the state finals. I worked hard at it.
All animals or any particular animal that you're good at?
All your standard barnyard animals, mostly, I suppose.
Give me a pig.
It hurts my throat. I'm old now.
All right, whatever. Huh?
Admit me, Cordis, to this history.
What?
Who? Prologue-like? Your humble patience pray, gently to hear, kindly to judge, the final thoughts of Armstrong and Getty.
So the spotlight's on you, and you turn away.
I'm old and my vocal cords are worn out, but let me try.
That's a pretty damn good pig.
Thank you.
Here's your host for final thoughts.
Katie looks disturbed.
Porky pig.
Let's get a final thought from everybody on the crew, beginning with our beloved Michelangelo pressing the buttons. Michael, what's your final thought?
Yeah, I bought my nephew a book, and about a year later, I saw the book holding up the table's leg. So, yeah, kids aren't reading. Kids aren't reading anymore, apparently.
How disappointing for everyone. Katie Green, our esteemed newswoman, has a final thought. Katie?
I'm trying to get over that noise you just made, but I'm going to go ahead and have my final thought just be, please don't ever do that again.
The pig noise?
Well, the idea that pigs say oink, oink, oink. If you've ever heard a hog, it's just not the case. Jack, a final thought.
Mine is a serious one. The biggest lie fueling the anti-Semitic student uprising from National Review. The youth are not leading some sort of insurgency against the powers that be. They are tools of the powers that be.
Yeah, I agree 100%. 100%. The youngsters have no idea what they're doing. They've been duped and they've been mobilized by their Marxist overlords. And I'm not trying to be funny. It's clearly what's happening.
And it's growing, not shrinking currently.
So So what's to be done? Dismantle every DEI program everywhere it exists. Start today.
Armstrong and Getty wrapping up another grueling four-hour workday.
So many people, thanks for a little time. Go to armstrongandgetty.com. Pick up an A&G t-shirt. We have a number of amusing designs. You can drop us a note at mailbag@armstrongandgetty.com. The hot links are fantastic. Very entertaining and informative. They refer to articles that we said we would post, so go read them.
Awesome. Follow us on Twitter if you want to, too. We'll see you tomorrow. God bless America.
So far as I know, you don't pay someone $130,000 not to have sex with
you. Armstrong and Getty.
But you have to pay attention to the cries that people have.
Absolutely.
Yay. We're in a battle for the soul of the country.
But this.
I don't care if I never get back.
You're about to open a pit of hell.
Can I make a very obvious point?
No, it was worth $5. It was pretty good.
It's true.
On that high note?
Hi. Good night, everybody.
Armstrong and Getty.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.